the lighting conditions. Operational traffic management plan set from 78 on are largely just some consistency and some tidy up matters, I think, bringing over good points made by the council. Operational noise and vibration, I think again, that's the recognition of the level of agreement and refinement that's come through the dialogue between Dr. Childs and Mr. Lloyd.
When it says 85, the North Island main trunk line, is that referring to the existing designation, or because doesn't the designation, what designation is it referring to? What corridor?
So at the moment, the North Island Rail Trunk designation is overlapped by the proposed hub designation.
Yeah.
And the intention is for the tracks to be moved in away from the current designation alignment.
So how can that condition work?
It's meant to be the relocated North Island main trunk lines, so we need to be more specific.
Yeah, I think you had a problem there. Yeah, so the idea is that the corridor still creates noise, but it'll be slightly moved, and those noise effects would not be included. But that condition, I don't think, achieves that.
Excuse me, sir, just a brief interjection, but Mr. Lloyd and Mr. Charles, or Dr. Charles, have had those discussions, but what we're not sure of is whether or not these conditions are an accurate reflection of those discussions. It's just the nature of the timing of it. So Mr. Lloyd can speak to that next week as well, but I just need that to be understood for the purpose of this discussion, that we don't know whether Mr. Lloyd has said yes or no to the precise wording.
What would be helpful would be a Dr. Charles and Mr. Lloyd to produce a joint witness statement, potentially, in the next few days.
Sir, through you, as I clarified at the start, that certainly these tabled are not at all a suggestion that these are agreed conditions in the same way the lighting conditions are agreed. So just to repeat that, I think given the time frames, and we had a brief discussion about whether joint witness statements were going to be a helpful use of folks' time, or in fact whether Mr. Lloyd would be marking these conditions up, which we anticipated he would.
Well, I'm just, I think there is an iteration here where the exclusion is quite a significant exclusion. It may be an appropriate exclusion, but it certainly was not present in the first set of conditions. And so we're interested in two things, whether Mr. Lloyd agrees, and B, that whatever it is intending to exclude, it is precise and accurate.
Thank you, sir. Just in relation to the reference to the exclusion of the NIMT, it did actually appear in the original set at 85B, little b, you'll see that's tracked out.
Yeah.
And Mr. Lloyd was comfortable with that in the
I apologize.
But that broader, in relation to the set that the council circulated on Friday, these limits do not apply to traffic on the perimeter or rail traffic on the North Island main trunk line. So that hadn't been amended by Mr. Lloyd. But I think the broader point Commissioner Sweetman is making is it would be helpful to clarify which aspects of this drafting Mr. Lloyd agrees with.
Yeah, I think we need to get clarity from Mr. Lloyd on that, because my understanding was that he wasn't comfortable with that. So just an issue sort of in flux now.
Yeah.
We can address that.
It may be that, given the significance of the noise issue, that Dr. Childs should be present and potentially questioned jointly on that when Mr. Lloyd.
We can arrange that, sir.
Unless there is some consensus before.
Thank you. Yeah, we'll look to arrange that. I think it was simply in the time we were looking to advance these noise conditions after that discussion with council yesterday afternoon. But we can continue to refine that for you, sir.
Condition 85B is dealing with the issue of noise insulation. And again, I understand that the conversations are getting closer around those matters.
Just on that point, is there a condition in this suite that's the 65 dBA boundary limit?
No.
So Dr. Childs does not support a 65 dBA limit even at the notional boundary?
The notional boundary being around the 20 metres without.
So the condition that Mr. Lloyd had.
It was Mr. Lloyd's proposed 85B, cap B, wasn't it, sir? Mr. Lloyd had proposed the freight hub must be designed to ensure that noise does not exceed 65 in the council set last week. Is that the condition, sir?
Which one did you say?
In the council set. Is it 85 cap B?
Yes. So that's not in there?
No, it's not, sir.
So, Ms. Bell, the experts agree that 65 dBLAEQ 1 hour is incompatible with residential activity. And Mr. Lloyd has taken that up and put an 85B, a red line limit at the boundary. And Dr. Charles said, perhaps the notional boundary, and he didn't disagree with me that it would be a nightmare not to have a red line. So what's your planning view about the absence or presence of a condition that limits noise so that it is not incompatible with existing residential activity?
My understanding is that's the residential activity that sits outside the house that we're referring to. So that's because the conditions that are drafted talk to insulation of the houses themselves, if that's necessary, or the measures to mitigate. So the conversation, as I recall it, was really about the ability to sit outside and on a deck and to be able to converse without shouting. Is that the reference, the notional boundary conversation
Well, I think the term incompatible with residential activity does not mean only sleeping or being inside. And so, yes, it would capture, for example, the ability to sit on your deck without having noise incompatible with residential activity. Whether I would translate that into whether you have to shout at each other or not, I'm not sure I'm prepared to go there, because that might be a mischaracterization of what 64 looks like.
I think that's something we need to have a further conversation around.
Yeah, I mean, it's just my view that lines like this, levels like this are somewhat arbitrary, but this is clearly an accepted limit where it's beyond compatible, and that Mr. Lloyd is right to set a limit.
I think that's the advances from the sets that you've previously seen, the significant change or otherwise.
Thank you. If you just give us a moment, we'll gather our thoughts around that, because it's the first time we've seen that document. But in relation to that, how do you see the distribution of this set? Do you anticipate submitters would be notified by Ms. Oliver of those offered conditions?
Certainly, sir. Draft condition set forms part of Kiwi Rail's evidence at this stage as V2, so it should absolutely be made available, and you know, maybe something for submitters or at least the panel to reflect on when we're hearing from submitters next week, in the same way you helpfully did with the Woodfields. I think some submitters, it's fair to say, are not going to want or be able to get into the detail of this, and that's fair enough, but we thought it would be helpful at least for everyone to have the set now as we're hearing from submitters next week.
So do you have a distribution list, Ms. Oliver? Could I just dictate to you the content of an email with that attachment? Could you convert it into PDF? Do you have a conversion? I think there's an export on Word to PDF. Please find attached a draft set of conditions that are an update from the evidence of Ms. Bell for Kiwi Rail. This set incorporates amendments suggested by the Palmerston North City Council with modifications. These conditions are offered by Kiwi Rail as part of their application. Was that too quick, or did you get it? And then just put my chair, John Marson, under the email and the copy of that, and they'll, if they want to read it, they can. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Bell, and thank you for paying a lot of attention over the last 4 days in terms of those hospital passes that were left to you to deal with. Always the case for us planners. There are a couple of areas that you didn't cover off. From my perspective, there seemed to be a bit of tension between Ms. Rimmer and Dr. Childs regarding the height of the noise mitigation structures in particular. How would those tensions be reconciled and between the landscape and the noise mitigation? And looking at the draft recommended conditions, particularly looking at the operational noise ones, which talks of heights up to not exceeding 5 metres, but then we had Dr. Childs talking about in some cases it might need to be taller, and then we had Ms. Rimmer saying conversely that she'd like to see them being less if possible. And then how does the community or potentially affected parties get involved in that process?
Sorry. The challenge with the noise walls has been, the noise mitigation structures, has been that they are relative to two points of reference, where the floor of the freight hub ends up being, and you've heard that there is some deviation there, potentially as they get through the process, but we've picked a 50 RL as the middle ground between being either lower or slightly above, and then the receiving environment and the height of the dwellings around the outside. And I think there was discussion about the variation with the Bunny Hill dips in terms of where the houses are relative to those little gullies and so forth that are around there. Dr. Childs is of the view that it might be that there are specific locations where more than 5 metres may be required. My understanding is that he's talking potentially about, I think it was about 0.5 at difference at point. The other part of the conversation has been Ms. Rimmer saying she wouldn't want to see a wall structure on top of an embankment, the wall structure being more than 3 metres because she felt that was too dominant. So I think there's a compromise in terms of the form of the structures, particularly in those higher areas, those northern areas around Bunnythorpe, because there is more width to work with. I think she mentioned that the planting area is about 20 to 30 metres in those locations, and so she could work with the bund to ensure that the heights are achieved to get the mitigations, but I recognise what you're saying, that we've got some specifics based on a 5 metre, but it might be a little more for specific locations. I think there's a further refinement that we have to deal with in terms of those two points.
Well, we had the discussion, we've had the discussion over the last few days around what a notice of requirement does and a designation, which... Yeah. We started talking about an envelope of effects and providing that certainty about what will and what won't be exceeded. So from my perspective, there's still a bit of uncertainty in that space in terms of what is the effects envelope that the community should expect if the requirement is confirmed. There's a few other things that haven't been picked up, unless any of my fellow commissioners want to follow up on that landscape and noise issue. No. I queried the interpretation and how Rule 9.11.3 noise insulation rail noise of the Palmerston North District Plan would be applied to the site.
Yep.
Obviously, the specific wording is to railway tracks, but I had a look at the definitions and doesn't seem to be a definition of railway track in the plan. So from your perspective, how would it apply to this site?
My understanding and is that the provision is relating to residential zone land?
Quite possibly.
And in this instance, the residential zoned land is at the far north of the site. So for the bulk of the area, we don't have residential zoned land, so they all wouldn't be relevant. And then my further understanding, I don't know the district plan intimately, so I may have misread or omitted provision, is it's linked to particular locations.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't think it would apply here anyway.
I'm sure Ms. Copplestone will inform us when the time comes to that. But otherwise, you've advised that in terms of dealing with any reverse sensitivity in the future, that the council may need to initiate a plan change to address that.
It's that, from my perspective, the reason why a notice of requirement is such an important part of the tool, if you're investing in land in an area, the district plan is, people talk about it as a notice board in some respects, and it gives and informs people of potential change. And I think, as new landowners or potential investors coming into an area, to see a designation of the size is the first start to that process. It's a double-edged sword, but at least it's informing people so that they can make some informed decisions before they go down into the further parts of the process of will I undertake development further on this land. But I think ultimately there's always benefit in district plan provisions, making sure that there is a signal in some form that in some instances further development may require a level of acoustic privacy, challenging to achieve that sometimes in terms of specificity of the rules to achieve the outcome in a district plan. But it is a common tool, I think, along rail corridors. I'm familiar with it being used with mixed use in terms of internal noise privacy.
I'm quite familiar with Kiwi Rail making submissions on plans seeking acoustic insulation provisions being put in. The other thing, obviously, is the regional policy statement, which does give direction to territorial authorities in this region to ensure that any potential reverse sensitive effects on significant infrastructure are appropriately addressed. But it's just by and by. I noted that in your revised conditions that you haven't offered a erosion and sediment control plan as the council had sought to be included. And can you talk us through that, given the earlier discussion this morning regarding that overlap of functions in respect of earthworks?
I think my experience is that that's one place when you get tension between, for an applicant, between the outcomes you're trying to achieve, either for a resource consent or in this instance, a notice of requirement in the district plan, and then you're obliged to obtain regional consents for the same works or overlapping works and both require that same output. What we've tried to do is to anticipate that there will be, we know there will be bulk earthworks consents. The scale of the works determine that. We've, through the condition suggested in terms of 17 lowercase bi, provided for the regional consent application to be something the community liaison group get involved in.
What I've seen from time to time in these types of large-scale developments is inclusion or reference to plans that are required under regional consents also be provided with an outline plan, for example, or with a construction management plan, for example. And I wonder if that's something, well, do you think that might be something that would address the council's concerns?
I think there is a common project setup type condition, so that those plans required for the regional consents and the outline plan are all in a are all available, consented and ready to go, and they are made available when it's a regional consent to the council in a district to make sure that they are have been obtained and there is consistency. So yes, I think it's a common technique to write a condition to that extent. And useful sometimes as a having worked with contractors, it's a useful reminder to them that they have to complete all the processes.
The changes have been useful. One of the things that had been top of my mind was the how the engagement with landowners would occur through the management plan process and through the investigations in terms of noise and landscape matters and the like. Obviously, we'll see what the council has to say and the community has to say in terms of the draft conditions in that regard. But to some degree, you've addressed what I was going to question you on that, about exactly how was that going to occur and when. What the role of the forum was in terms of providing input into plans. Just going through my notes, many pages. Now, that's the one thing I think would be quite good to test out. And I suppose we've had a lot of discussion around it with wetlands, is when you do, you know, should the notice be confirmed and you do go out on site and there's further investigations and there happens to be a wetland that's found and maybe it's quite a significant one. And potentially there may need to be some redesign occur. How does that impact on, should the notice be confirmed, a confirmed notice of requirement? What would happen?
The size of the wetland is obviously going to determine the path that has to be followed. If it's small and the change is minor, I think the opportunity to come back and look at, is it still generally in accordance with that change? So the first condition allows for a slight variation. If it's a significant change to the form of what was lodged, then It's a condition of the designation that the concept plan and the landscape plan are given effect to, so to speak. So I think it ultimately, from a procedural sense, would have to be something that KiwiRail would have to consider and come back to modify designation, because they'd have to modify that condition. That was one of the risk questions and why we wanted to get onto the site and land as much and as soon as possible to identify what that risk would be. The current view is that it would be a surprise if there was a large wetland identified. The small wetland, if it qualified in terms of the definition, depending on where it's located, obviously with the change in ground level, highly likely to be removed. As significant infrastructure, KiwiRail has that gateway to apply that you and I wouldn't be able to seek.
But wetlands, for example, are just one thing that might occur. Is that right? That there are still quite a few unknown variables at play. I'm just going to gather my thoughts some more and let one of my fellow commissioners jump in, should they wish.
Kia ora, Ms. Bell. Excuse me. Thank you very much for your evidence and for the further clarification you provided today in response to questions. Given that the Mana Whenua conditions are still being worked through, I won't have a lot of questions for you. But one that springs to mind in relation to condition 30, which deals with the requiring authority preparing a Mana Whenua engagement framework, it strikes me that in order for that framework to be effective, it would surely need to be developed in advance of the detailed design process so that it can be used to inform the design. Would you agree with that?
Yes.
What is your view on including a bit more detail around the time frame?
I think it's essential. I agree with you.
Great.
I'll just jump in on that I purposefully didn't ask you any questions about that, but that was front of mind for me, was the actual timing and sequencing of when that occurs. So from my perspective, it needs to be a key first up consideration that then informs everything else.
Absolutely.
And I was concerned at the conditions that you offered earlier, that both the landscape management plan and the Mana Whenua framework were going to be developed at the same time. And I don't think that's appropriate.
Thank you. That was going to be my next question.
Sorry.
That's perfectly all right. Just one further question for you along those lines. I'm conscious of the fact that submissions from all of the iwi have unanimously called for a partnership approach to both the development and decision making in relation to the project. Is this something that KiwiRail are considering in their discussions with the Mana Whenua at the moment?
I'm sorry, I can't speak to that because I haven't been directly involved in those discussions.
All right. Thank you. I'll save that question for next week. Kia ora.
Just as stylistically, if you could take these points away, I haven't discussed this, but I have a preference for the active voice and also for following the traditional conventions of drafting. So I would use must where you use the word shall, except where shall is the correct word, such as condition two, where it says that the conditions will prevail over, because I think must is a stronger word. And instead of saying prior to, say before. And where you can make it the active voice, obviously that's desirable, so that you get the picture of who is doing what when. And just in relation to condition one, I'm not sure that the word accompanying our land plan, the word in the second line, the works, is the correct term. It should be except as modified by the conditions below, the freight hub and its activities and works authorised by this designation must be undertaken in general accordance with the following information provided by the required authority. Because it's just not a work, it's the whole project which we have defined as the freight hub. So it's getting that right. And I'm not sure that removing subject to final design completes the exercise of getting that certainty, because you say except as modified by the conditions below and accompanying outline plans, but the outline plans can't suddenly modify the thing. So can you just look at that? But those are some stylistic things that I prefer in terms of how a set of conditions reads. Thank you. Other than that, I have no expertise in conditions. Commissioner Sweetman. There's no strong answer to that.
The only other comment I'd make in terms of the conditions at this point is just the, I think the chair said it was a threat or something the other day, just what I'd mentioned about providing that certainty about what the management plans are to achieve. And I think we've just had that discussion before in terms of the heights of walls and things like that, which the planting is sitting now in a condition by itself, but you've still got the heights of the noise mitigation structures sitting in a management plan. So just some thought again in terms of what we really want to be able to do is, should the notice be confirmed, create that envelope of effects that there is that certainty what will not be exceeded. Thank you.
And just for me, in terms of the offered condition, I'd ask Kiwi Rail to consider, and Mr. Lloyd and Dr. Charles to consider 85B, so that where subparagraph B applies, so sound levels are predicted to exceed 55 dBA at any time or more than 45 between the hours of 10 p.m. and 7 p.m, it says the requiring authority shall undertake investigations to determine if acoustic treatment is necessary. And then it goes on to say, well, what the installation will achieve is that level. But the question is, who's deciding, is it reasonably necessary, and what would that be? So could it be if is reasonably necessary if the levels that are specified at the end of that condition are not being achieved. In other words, If you're in the envelope where the first sentence of B applies, shouldn't you be entitled to insulation and ventilation to achieve those levels? Isn't that the intention of this condition? And I don't think that's what it reads. It says, well, where reasonably necessary. And then once that determination is made, then you achieve that. And that creates uncertainty, and it's someone making a judgment, and I prefer more certainty about that.
And then when the treatment has to go in,
yeah,
as well.
So as you go through, just ask yourself those six pillars of wisdom: when, where, why, how, who, and see if they're answered by the condition. I'm sure you understand that. And we understand it's a work in progress. So is that all?
I suppose the only other point, and not aimed at KiwiRail at this point, but rather at the council, and certainly for where possible with submitters, to focus in comments when we hear from you in terms of those areas of difference and highlighting the areas of agreement, and the more work that can be done on that over the next few days, not on the weekend though, would be very helpful for us. So just highlighting the points of agreement and disagreement, and what is outstanding in terms of what we've heard about to date. Other than that, I've got no further questions for KiwiRail.
Thank you. All right, well, thank you. I presume, Ms. Arthur Young, that concludes the case for KiwiRail.
It does, sir. Thank you.
So the format, if it hasn't been explained to you for next week, is that when submitters are presenting, that will be the presentation table.
Mm-hmm.
And so they will have the full opportunity to come and speak to us directly on their concerns. And equally, my preference, given we are video streaming, is that Mr. Jessen and his team would also go onto the presentation table as required. We did signal this morning that we had some doubt about whether some of the council reporting people will be as long as suggested. For example, we don't have any questions remaining of Mr. Wright on lighting, and there is a joint witness statement. Sort of content on stormwater to have the witnesses just simply identify any outstanding matters, recognising there is a high level of agreement. Michael Fan, the key issue there is around the health and safety condition. I would have thought Ms. Copplestone could address that as a condition planning issue, and he may not be required. Obviously, Ms. Whitby, Mr. Lloyd, Ms. Ryan, Ms. Fraser, Ms. Quinn, they're all witnesses that need to attend. And obviously, Ms. Copplestone is going to have to both address us on the planning and also where the conditions are at, and capture that for us. So that's an indication, Mr. Jessen. You can do it how you want, but I think there are some areas where we're probably satisfied, such as lighting and so forth.
Yeah, thank you, sir, for the indication. I think that the order that we've presented is sort of front-loaded with the witnesses who may be able to get in and out faster. The way they split over the days isn't necessarily a backloaded in terms of those witnesses who are dealing with external events.
Yes.
Take your point about Mr. Wright, I agree, I think he doesn't need to be there. Think about Mr. Fan.
Yeah. And just. Yeah, that's fine. Just give an indication of where things are at if they haven't been following it. And
I can say I think it's some of the witnesses have been a bit nervous about their absence being misconstrued as disinterest. I can assure you they're all watching very attentively to the Zoom sessions every day and checking in for key witnesses.
Thank you. I appreciate that. And I appreciate that... just having that facility doesn't indicate the council's lack of attention to those matters. I appreciate that. And, of course, you have quite sensibly made sure that some of the key witnesses, such as transport and noise, have been present at the appropriate time.
Thank you.
So just follow up on that. You will have those witnesses listed for Friday here for Thursday in case we...
The full team has been asked to be here for Thursday and Friday. Those who finished, given permission to excuse themselves earlier.
Thank you, Mr. Jessen.
Yes. All right. So we look forward to hearing from submitters next week and the council. And we thank KiwiRail for its presentation, and it's been a very informative and illuminating first week, and hope that everyone has a restful weekend. We will study these conditions more closely over the weekend and refresh our memory about the submitters that are scheduled to attend. So we will be doing some homework, and we will resume at 9 o'clock on Monday. Thank you.
Thank you.